Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2016, Episode 6. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm your co-host, Travis Justice, joined once again by former Husker All-American, the brains behind the entire operation, 1994 Big 8 Athlete of the Year, the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska. Hey, don't forget the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center, named after former Husker great Dave Remington. The Remington Trophy Banquet will take place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. As the year starts to move on, we're going to keep you informed on who's this year's Ford Legends Award winner as well, and who the featured speaker is going to be. The Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave, of course, is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States, 70,000 worldwide. For more on how you can help fight cystic fibrosis and help those who have it, visit Esiason.org. Coming up a little bit later on in the podcast, the Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. Hey, we want to welcome Husker Hounds to the Husker Doc Talk podcast this season. Now with three stores in Omaha, Husker Hounds is the best place to buy Nebraska gifts and officially licensed apparel. First game of the season, folks, is coming up on Saturday, so you need new Husker gear. Get to one of three Omaha locations, including the new one at 149th and Maple, which is now open. And for online orders, visit huskerhounds.com. And of course, we also want to thank huskermax.com for sharing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. For up-to-date Husker news, visit huskermax.com. And welcome in the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska. What's going on, Doc?
How are you doing tonight?
You know, it's good. It's a late start. Because
for us, it's a little later than we normally
Because you're
go.
Saving lives. That's what you do for a living.
You know what? Sometimes the whole working thing kind of gets in the way of stuff.
But you know what's great after a hard day's work?
Beer.
That's right. You know, and of course, it's custom here at the Husker Doc Talk podcast that we drink beer. And now we're kind of on a Nebraska craft brew kick. Last week we had a zip line.
We went with a little zip. Did you see some of the tweets we were getting?
Yes.
We had people trying zip line hibiscus saison because we were talking about it.
So this is, we're going to be like your beer connoisseurs. And this week.
We are not afraid to try new things.
We got you. A bottle of some very high-end Nebraska Brewing Company Inception Series. This is the Sally Weiss, which is an Imperial Hefeweizen aged in Chardonnay barrels. Now here's the description. I'm going to need my lovely bifocals. It's an award-winning Bavarian-style Hefeweizen. EOS provides the basis for the Imperial Hefeweizen aged in second-use French oak Chardonnay. Huge aromas of banana and clove from the yeast intertwined to create a delectable wonder. Created to enjoy immediately. And this is my first. This is about $15 a bottle. And this is the size of a wine
which
bottle.
Which is not bad for a 750 ml bottle of beer.
So
for a good beer, and especially when you're talking about a limited release. There we go. You know, that's kind of what it's going to run. And it's nice when you see a lot of the local breweries putting these out because it gives you a little bit of a different taste, something else to try. It's not the usual fare. And a lot of these, you know, the nice thing is when you look at a lot of these microbrews in and around Omaha, Lincoln, across the state, they're not afraid to try a few different things, try and do some new things. And it's nice seeing them do this periodically where they put a beer like this out.
Now, I will say this, and I'm good friends with the Cavillacs who own Nebraska Brewing.
You've never introduced me.
I'm sorry. I will do that. I'm not a Hefeweizen guy, but I tell you what, you could really tell this was aged in Chardonnay.
It has. I'm trying to figure out a way to describe it. A wine-like crispness.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I mean, I wouldn't say that I could do more than maybe the glass that I'm drinking.
The fact that this is 8.5% alcohol by volume says you and I are probably not going to do much more than the glass we're drinking.
Of course, the first game of the season is right around the corner. That means people are starting to drink, and that's probably in celebration that college football is finally here. Rob, the Huskers open up the season against Fresno State. Nebraska, 29-point favorite to start the season.
Probably a little bit better than they were against BYU last year, I'd say.
Yeah, you think so?
Just a smidge.
You know, it's kind of funny when you look at Fresno State. Just 3 years ago, this team was 11-2, and then they fall off the cliff.
These guys talk about fall. You know, they have just literally fallen off the map the last few years. And, you know, sometimes you make a coaching change. These guys made a pretty prominent coaching change a few years back. I think this is their current head coach. I think this is his third year, fourth year. And it's been kind of a downhill slide ever since he's hit the door. They have tried to make some changes here in the past offseason. I know they've brought in new coordinators on both sides of the ball. Sometimes that makes a difference. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, the thing is, though, I don't know if they've had much of an upgrade in personnel other than on defense. And this is a team that, other than the fact that they weren't good last year, I know they were, if you look at college football rankings, in most major categories as well as sort of overall, you know, nobody really pays attention to anything past the top 25. Most pundits, when they start doing kind of their full Division 1A rankings, I'm still not going to say FCS.
It's you know, Division
1. It's FBF. Division 1A is FBS.
Yes, and Division 1AA is FCS.
Yeah, it's like crapshoot and bullshit. That's what the BS and CS stand
okay,
for.
Okay, I like that. Fine. Is I that like okay? It. Yeah, it's fine.
Anyway, but yeah, nobody pays attention to it. But if you look at the, you know, every major publication puts out some kind of top 100 ranking, or they basically go through and rank all 100 and whatever it is, 13 teams or 117 teams anymore. It always changes a little bit. You've always got a couple of those 1AA teams popping up there. You know, Fresno's all the last two, maybe even 3 years, they've been hanging out. And I know this year again as well that they are worse than the 100th team in most people's rankings. I mean, it's pretty sad when you look at where they're at. I don't know if these coaching changes are going to have a big impact. Like I said, sometimes it can really help. I mean, you look at Nebraska with Frank Solich bringing Bo Pelini as a D coordinator. Makes a big change. I mean, it had a huge impact on Nebraska.
So you have Nebraska that's taking on Fresno State. You mentioned they got the new offensive coordinator. It appears, if you read the Fresno papers and the California papers, they want to try to establish a running game. And they got Dontell James back, who is back from a knee surgery. He didn't injure his knee in spring ball. He didn't injure it over the summer. He injured it early in fall practice. He had surgery. And he says he's back now, and he feels like he never had surgery. Is that just a scope? What do they do?
You know, my guess would be when you say early in fall practice, do you mean fall practice this year?
Yes.
Or last year? You know, usually with something like that, oftentimes what happens is guys will have, you always hear a meniscus or a cartilage injury. There's two small little rings of cartilage that basically act as sort of a cushion in between your upper leg and lower leg, and it's called the meniscus cartilage. It's a frequent injury that you see in a lot of different sports. You can get some small tears in there. You get a small tear, and you know, I think everybody kind of knows what I'm talking about when I say you're walking along, and sometimes people will have like little clicks in their knee that you'll hear when you're walking, or you can feel it. Sometimes people complain of their knee locking up, so to speak. Oftentimes what that is that little cushioning cartilage in between the upper and lower legs will develop a small tear in it and a little piece of that cartilage, and it doesn't take much. It can be a pretty small amount. It can actually flip in between the joint and cause pain, discomfort, and it can cause the joint essentially to kind of lock up. You can't fully straighten it, or it can keep you from fully bending it. From a surgical standpoint, if it's a relatively uncomplicated issue, The surgeons I talk to often say that all it takes is you go in, you make a couple of small scope incisions, you go in with one scope to take a look, you go in with another scope that you can insert some tools into, and essentially you just trim off that torn off little piece of cartilage. Now, if that's all it is, small little piece, you just kind of trim that piece off that's kind of getting in the works and gumming things up, it can be a very quick recovery because you're basically going in the one little thing that's causing the problem. You're going in and removing that. You always have a little bit of residual inflammation from the surgery that you need to get over, but I've seen guys get over that in anywhere from a few days to a couple of weeks maybe. And then you've just got a couple essentially half-inch incisions down on the knee as well. And that's really about it. So could this guy have recovered within 2-3 weeks from surgery like that? Yes, he could, most definitely.
So Dontell James is scheduled to be back, and he's kind of what they're looking for in their offense, which last year did not have an identity, did not score points. This year, they look to run and look to push the tempo.
Well, and you know, and I think part of it is they haven't had much success at the quarterback position. Yeah. Also, if I recall, last year not a good passing team. You know, a lot of the pundits are talking about they've got this freshman quarterback that I think it's Davis who actually might be the guy who ends up being the starter. They've got a transfer from Cal as well. Who you've got a guy who's got a couple of years under his belt, but he wasn't playing much at Cal either, and so it's going to be interesting. I think they may be stuck trying to run the ball, but I think a lot of it might be because they have to. They just don't have anybody at the quarterback spot who's really got a whole lot of capabilities, at least the previous year they haven't. Like I said, it'll be interesting to see what this guy from Cal can do if he gets into the game, if he's all that good. But you know, usually when you see these guys who transfer in from other schools, you look at Nebraska and the quarterbacks who have transferred from Nebraska, it's not like any of them have done a whole lot of good elsewhere that they've gone. It's hard to transfer and really make a big impact.
So the black shirts have been handed out. They were handed out earlier in the week, 13 to start out the season. All eyes going to be on those guys. And with some of the big questions heading into the season, can Nebraska stop the big play? And the answer to that last year was no. That was even against bad teams.
And that was, boy, that was kind of the hallmark of the Nebraska's defense last year was the big play. I thought Nebraska did really well, and I've said this a ton of times. I talked about it all last season. They did a very good job against the run. Big pass plays absolutely killed them last year. I don't think Fresno has the tools that a lot of teams last year had. You know, BYU wasn't a team that was going to run a really strong, controlled drives against Nebraska. If they were going to beat Nebraska, it was how they did it last year once their starting quarterback got injured and they put in that big, tall, gunslinging freshman. And he's a guy who can chuck the ball 60 yards downfield, and that's how they won the game. I don't think Fresno has anybody even remotely of that caliber. Now, the other thing is that you look at some of the teams that beat Nebraska last year on big plays, and you look at BYU, you look at Miami, you look at these teams that were able to just essentially kind of cut up Nebraska's defensive backfield with the big passing plays. Fresno does not have the talent level like any of those teams have. Now, like I said, I got to be honest, I haven't watched Fresno State play football for probably 2 years.
And you know what? That's okay.
That's true. It's been 2 years since I've watched Fresno State play Nebraska. And that was just that blistering hot game out in Fresno, whatever it was, 105 at kickoff. Yeah. It was a nighttime kickoff. But they just don't have the talent to stack up. And it's across the board. That's the sad thing. And now you look at some of these teams Nebraska played last year. To Illinois, for instance. Illinois was a horrendous team last year. They were able to hang in against Nebraska because they didn't have
turnovers, stupid coaching at the end.
Yeah, unwise coaching decisions. It was not the best coaching
decisions.
I use
stupid and you say unwise.
Yeah, I just make it sound better.
You do.
It's like Men in Black. I make this look good. I make it sound better. It was not great coaching decisions in the Nebraska. Riley even basically said that after the Illinois game. He was like, yeah, we could have done things better. And he was talking about himself and the other coaches. Nebraska had a ton of turnovers that day. Would have been nice if they had done, weird stuff like run the ball instead of trying to force a passing game in a hard driving, raining windstorm. But that being said, Illinois had not a great but a solid offensive line. They didn't have great defenders, but they had some okay guys up front on defense. They had a quarterback who was an okay game manager. They had one really, really, really good wide receiver. Fresno doesn't have a good solid offensive line. They don't have a solid defensive line. They don't have a proven game manager at quarterback. They don't have a really good wide receiver like Illinois had. They just don't lack. Boy, I got to be honest. They really don't have any of the tools in the toolbox. The one place where I could see them causing Nebraska trouble would be on the defensive line, and it's only because they've got a couple of big interior defensive linemen who are JUCO transfers, totally, totally and completely unproven commodities. But it's a couple of big bodies, and if Nebraska's offensive line doesn't match up well against those guys, I could see them causing trouble. It's kind of like their version of if these guys turn out to be the next Malik Collin, Vincent Valentine type of players, it could cause Nebraska fits because those are the kind of guys who could shut down Nebraska's running game. And I think that's where people really want to see Nebraska shine, is in getting the running game going.
Hold on to that thought, because I want to talk about the offensive side of the ball heading into week number one and also this caliber of game to start the season off. But first, I want to do this week's Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight that focuses on Michael Dieter from Wisconsin. He's 6'6". He's 316-pound sophomore. Now, last year, this kid started 13 games as a freshman, made 7 starts at left guard, 6 starts at center, including the season's final 5 games at center. Was a constant for the offensive line, beset with injuries that used 7 different starting combinations last year. The offensive line last year for Wisconsin helped the offense produce 228.3 yards passing per game. That was the 3rd best average in school history. This kid has size and experience over time. Rob, I think he was a 3-star recruit coming out of high school. I don't get into stars, but he's already getting 5-star reviews. If he doesn't win this year, I think he's a kid that could win this trophy in the future.
I do too, and I thought he was also. We talk about some of the other guys that we've brought up here the last few weeks. I think Allen last week from Michigan State was maybe one of the few guys that actually wasn't the best offensive lineman on his own team in 2015, yeah, just because Michigan State was absolutely loaded. But this guy was arguably the best offensive lineman last year on Wisconsin's team. And he's a great example of what we've kind of talked about with a few of these guys, where you take the best guy you got and you play him at center. And this is a guy that I think prototypically would be a little bit, at least on the surface, he looks like a tackle.
He's a big boy, man.
He does. I mean, this guy does not look like.
I mean, he's your size. How tall are you? I mean, he's 6'6". How tall are you?
He's taller than I am. And I was a tackle for.
What was your playing weight?
Almost 330.
Okay, because he's 316, but he's still a sophomore. I mean, so he can get bigger.
And he's a guy who, but like I said, I guess my point is you look at him, he looks like the prototypical tackle. But the guy is a solid ball player, and I'd love to know where Wisconsin keeps finding offensive
got this guy out of Ohio
like this. They get him, and they get him from all over. You kind of made sort of a quiet point there. He wasn't the highest recruited guy coming out. Now, when I talk about that, it's one of these things where it's sad when you mention a guy who's rated as a 3-star recruit, and that's kind of
it's like, why do we want a 3-star guy? It's like,
well, you know, we've got a few scholarships left. I suppose we could kind of round out the class with a couple of 3-star guys. It's sad that it's gotten to that point, but this is a guy who, you know, he's a guy that this guy could be a real star. I don't think he's going to win it this year.
No, I don't think so either. He's on that watch list, and I'm focusing right now on Big Ten guys.
Yeah, but. Which, you know, we haven't gotten him to yet. I'm looking at Ohio State center, Elflin.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be arguably the best center in the conference. We haven't gotten to him yet. This could be a heck of a runner-up. And it's just the thing that I like about him is you've got a guy who's, for a center, for an interior offensive lineman, you usually don't see these guys who are out of that 6'5", 6'6", mold, 6'4". You almost get so tall, you almost start to lose leverage again. You get some of these 6'3", 330-pound defensive tackles who essentially can kind of get underneath you and work that leverage against you. This is a guy who has that height. He's got these incredibly long arms. He looks like a prototypical NFL left offensive tackle. But if you watch him play, he's a guy who plays incredibly low to the ground. He's got great hip bend, very good feet. And it's not easy for some of these taller, almost lankier guys to be able to bend at the hips and have that flexibility to get low to the ground. And this guy's got that. Some guys just don't have that. I mean, usually you have to go to the NBA to find guys this tall who have that ability to bend, get low, and use that athleticism. If I was an NFL coach, I'd already be drooling right now over a guy like this.
Michael Dieter, your Remington Trophy watch list spotlight for this week. If you want to see the entire fall watch list for the Remington Trophy, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 14th at Rococo Theater in Lincoln. For tickets, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Let's go back to the Nebraska game. And, you know, they're playing Fresno State. They're a 29-point favorite. Is this a game where you get in, get out, don't get anybody hurt, get your fundamentals? Is this a game you want to start with? Or look what else is getting played this weekend. You've got Oklahoma-Houston. You've got...
There's some great games. You've got Clemson-Auburn.
You've got LSU-Wisconsin at Lambeau Field. You've got Notre Dame in Texas. I mean, you just got really good games.
This is an incredibly uninteresting game from a fan standpoint. So, I will admit that.
Okay, what would you rather start with? I mean, is it better to get a game under your belt like a Fresno State than ease into it?
This is one of these games where I would love to see Nebraska go out and absolutely roll these guys in the first half, and then I would love to see Riley just start rolling every backup under the sun into the game, get everybody else a bunch of experience. And I think I'm kind of going off of where you were asking me the question, but what I'd like to see happen would be play your starters, get a good rhythm going, work on the basics. Don't show anything extensive, but I'm kind of work your bread and butter basics and get your starters off the field. But I think where you're going, you're thinking almost more the sense of, hey, do you want that early test right out of the shoot?
Would this have been better if it was Nebraska-Oregon week one instead of Nebraska-Fresno State week one?
It kind of depends on what kind of team you've got. Now, if you know, I sound like a complete... like early 90s Homer here when I say this.
That's fine. It's a Husker podcast.
Yeah, well, that's true. Take the team I played on in 94.
Okay.
We were a team that was coming off of a national title game loss. And it was a true 1-2 matchup.
Yes.
It was almost like a 1.5 versus 1.5 because we were 1-1 poll, 2 in the other poll, and it was flip-flopped for Florida State. And it was a very, very close loss. I mean, we were, depending on how you want to phrase it, we were 1 or 2 plays away or 1 or 2 officiating calls away from winning a national title. We were a very good team going into 94.
You were.
We were good enough that we could go down to the third quarterback and still beat a top 15 team in the country.
And you did.
On the road. And we did. We were very good that year. that's the kind of team that you kind of want to see that test right out of the chute. You want to go against somebody like what we did. We went against West Virginia in the kickoff classic. They were coming off in an 11-1 season. They had lost to a very good Florida team in the Sugar Bowl. And we went out against them. They had lost Major Harris, who was their starting quarterback from the year before, who was a Heisman candidate. They still had a ton of talent. They had a big, big defensive line, solid offensive line, a very good running back, little bit of an unproven quarterback, and arguably the best punter in the country that year, although I still take Darren Erstad as my punter. They were a great team, and we beat them 31-0, and the score was more lopsided than that. We had five turnovers that day and still beat them 31-0.
I forgot you turned the ball over five times.
Oh, God, I swear to God, it was literally every other series we fumbled the ball.
Well, so that leads me to my next question.
But anyway, my point is, very good team, proven team, known commodity. You kind of want a little bit of a test right out.
Yeah, but
of
you were good that year. I mean, Nebraska's coming off a losing season.
I'm saying that was the situation where you do want a test. You want a test right out of the gate. Let's go against... Doesn't have to be a top five team, but let's go against a nationally ranked team on national TV in kind of a big game, and let's see how we do. That's what you want for a proven team, a veteran team that has it's a known commodity. You got good players at every position, and we had that. We kind of needed that test right out of the gate. We kind of had a run of it because we opened with West Virginia, followed it up on the road at Texas Tech, which, again, very good team, strong defense. You had Zach Thomas, All-American middle linebacker.
Boy, Lawrence went nuts that game, yeah, man.
Zebby Lethbridge, who I can't believe I remember his name.
Dude, like I was there.
The
I remember it.
Names ever. One of the better option quarterbacks in the country. They were a very good team. We demolished them. Then we got Terry Donahue and UCLA at home. We beat the guy. We had their middle, Donnie Edwards, All-American linebacker, played. He was a Pro Bowler for the Chiefs, and then he went to the San Diego Chargers, became a Pro Bowler for the Chargers. Then he came back to the Chiefs, was a Pro Bowler for the Chiefs. Bubble Hall of Fame NFL guy. I remember late third, maybe early fourth quarter of the game, we were rolling up so much rushing yardage against UCLA. Donnie Edwards was literally crying. There were tears coming out of his face. He was so frustrated that they couldn't stop our running game. That's what you want for a proven team. I don't know if this Nebraska team should have a lineup like that. You don't want to go against three top 25 teams in your first three non-conference games because Nebraska is not a proven commodity. Well, I think they need a Fresno State. I think they need a Wyoming. I think they need to kind of work a few kinks out. These are essentially, in my mind, these are full dress rehearsal scrimmages for them.
See, and I fall right in line with you, and that is if Nebraska was, and again, these schedules are set years in advance. So, but I think it works out perfect because you want to set Tommy Armstrong up for success. You're missing two pretty good players because of suspensions in game number one. You don't want to start it off. You know, for the fans, it'd be great to see a top 25 team, top 10 team. I get that. But I think for the natural progression, and the tests are going to come. Just look at the schedule. You know the tests are going to come. It doesn't matter when they come. This team, I'm with you. It's a natural progression. I think this is the perfect way to start. Maybe gives a little bit of false hope in some areas, but that's still...
Fans
are going to do that anyway.
The only way I myself am getting false hope over this is if we see second stringers putting up four or five touchdowns against Fresno State, which basically would mean, in my mind, that Nebraska's putting up one of these 70-21 pastings like we did against Pacific back in 94, 95. That's the only way I'm getting false hope. If Nebraska goes out and beats Fresno 35-14, I'm going to sit back and go, And again, I'll throw the caveat out there. This is a little bit of sort of a lose-lose situation. If Nebraska goes out and has a really close, tight game, I'm going to sit back and go, oh, my God, we got work to do. Well, if they blow them out, I'm going to sit there and go, okay, well, you know what? We really should have smoked these guys, and we probably should have beat them worse, and I'm going to sit there and nitpick. Here's some turnovers that shouldn't have happened. Here's some coaching calls that shouldn't have happened. And God damn it, Tommy, why didn't you tuck it and run when you should have done that? Or why didn't you dump it to the tight end in the flat for the first down instead of going for the guy in the back corner of the end zone and throwing a pick by instead? So,
okay, I didn't run this question by you, but I'm going to ask you. Because you mentioned earlier, establish a run, run the football. Over under on the number of passes you'd like to see Tommy Armstrong attempt on Saturday. I know you're laughing because it'd
four.
Be four. No, but I was thinking 12 to 14 would be a good number.
I think that would be a good number. I would love to see a 2-to-1 pass ratio. I think that would be absolutely ideal. 60. I mean, basically like a good 60-40 split would be at most like a 60-40 split. Anything more than that, then I think you are seeing Nebraska moving into this where you're playing away from your strengths and where you're going into a situation where they are trying to force Riley and Langdorf's system, which, like I said, is a combination of a pro-style offense kind of coupled with a little bit of a West Coast spread. They'd be trying to force that onto an offense that just doesn't have the personnel quite yet. And when I say personnel, I'm talking pretty much about the quarterback. They don't have the quarterback to run that kind of offense. And they will not until next year. Unless Tommy gets injured early on.
But if he does not turn the ball over, or I shouldn't say turn the ball over, if he doesn't throw an interception, that's a success, right? That's a big deal.
You know, I can say that, yeah, but on the flip side, you look at, say, that Illinois game last year where you had passes just burying themselves into the dirt, you know, except it was artificial turf. I mean, two out of three out of every four passes that Tommy threw that way went bouncing across the wet turf in a near blinding wind and rainstorm. But some of that was passes that never should have been called, never should have been thrown. That's a game where Nebraska should have lined up and just said, hey, you know what, we're gonna take the fullback, we're going to take Divine Azigbo, and we are just going to absolutely pound it at you play after play after play after play, and eventually the defense is going to break. And they didn't do that. So you can't put it all on Tommy. He's not a great passer. This guy will not be throwing passes in the NFL. I'm just saying that.
That is an accurate statement.
It's not that I have anything against Tommy Armstrong. If anything, I got to be honest with you, as much as I kind of bag on him on occasion, I love the guy. I think he's a very good quarterback. I think he's a great kid. I think he is an excellent leader. I think he's a great representative for the university and for the athletic department. The kid's not a throwing quarterback. He's just not.
This coaching staff has to put him in situations to succeed.
That they do. And, you know, and I've got kind of a secondary worry there is that, shoot, you know what? Tommy may just decide that he's going to be Tommy and he's going to try and replicate these 80-yard game-winning bombs that he threw against Georgia in the bowl game 3 years ago. And I hope he doesn't do that. If the coaching staff calls a relatively conservative game plan, and if they do that the whole of the time that Tommy Armstrong is Nebraska's quarterback, I mean, literally season-long, they call a relatively conservative game plan, I think Nebraska could do very well. I mean, the play calling itself could drastically limit the turnovers.
You know, it's funny because I've been watching the Big Ten Network and, you know, Jerry DiNardo, that whole grunt. They don't like Nebraska. They're not up there. Listen, you know where I stand. You know, I think Iowa's going to win the West, but I think this comes down to Nebraska and Iowa. I don't know why people are writing off Nebraska as much as they are.
I think it's easy to look at their
schedule.
Not their schedule. I think it's easy to look at their record last year, to look at the schedule this year, which last year was the schedule in which if you wanted to ease your way into a coaching change, last year is the season to do it, yep. Schedule-wise. This year's schedule, all of those, games are on the road this year, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan State. It's all road games. And then you're taking...
It's a gauntlet.
It is, and you're taking kind of the marquee non-conference matchup. It's a little bit of an upgrade going from BYU to Oregon. So it is. It's a tougher schedule. And so from the guys on the outside looking in, I don't blame DiNardo and those guys do, although it's not like DiNardo did a whole hell of a lot in his coaching career, for Pete's sake.
But you know what? These guys did it to Iowa last year, and I'm going to wear my Iowa hat here. I mean, nobody thought Iowa was going to go 12-0 last year. I didn't. You didn't.
Because personnel-wise, other than Ricky Stanzi transferring, they were roughly the same team they were the year before.
You mean Jake Rudock?
Who cares? It's Iowa.
Yeah, but he wanted Michigan. And C.J. Beathard's a pretty good. Don't get me started. It's week number one.
Ricky Stanzi. We've got
plenty to go.
I know.
Got plenty.
I know my Iowa quarterbacks from 19.
Hey, America, love it or leave it, buddy.
Sorry, 2007. Whenever Stanzi was there. Like I said, it's Iowa. Who cares?
You're just trying to get underneath my skin, aren't you?
They raise some good swine, though. I'll say that.
Good pig. It's a good pig over there.
God,
see.
You know what? I don't say Husker chops. They are Iowa chops.
So,
But you're right. They pegged Iowa that way. They're pegging Nebraska this way now. I will always go back to the fact that in my mind, looking at Nebraska last year, the on-field product that we saw was no different than anything we saw in the previous three, maybe even four seasons under Pelini. They were roughly the exact same team. Nebraska under Pelini the last 3-4 years, most games, they were maybe 1, 2, 3 plays from winning or losing every game they
played. And that is the difference in college football between being great, being average, or
It's the difference between being... You know, I shouldn't say being great because...
Sure it is.
Most teams...
Was Iowa a great team? I think Iowa actually has a better team this year.
Come on. Iowa last year was not... Okay, everybody, we crack these jokes about Iowa last year. It's like, Iowa's best team ever.
But it wasn't.
Barely beat Nebraska's worst team ever. No, that was not Iowa's best team ever.
That sounds...
Record-wise, yes.
But your greatness is considered on your record. Yeah, whether we like it or not...
That wasn't even close. That was...
I'm with you.
That was a pretty damn good Iowa team that had a ton of heart.
And luck.
They did. Well, you know what? They played well. They played smart. They limited mistakes. They did not have a lot of turnovers.
No turnovers.
That was one of the best collective game managements that I have seen between coaching staff, offensive players, defensive players.
But the point
throughout the season.
That's the fine line between success and failure.
Well, it's the fine line between being... A very so-so bad team and maybe not great, but pretty good team. And all of those 9-10 win Bo Pelini teams, they were pretty good teams. They weren't great. You had some games where they presented matchup problems against, say, like Clemson and Georgia in bowl games and would knock some of these really, really good teams off. But most of those Bo Pelini teams were not great teams. No matter what the record they had, they weren't. They were pretty good teams that barely beat a lot of teams. I mean, you had a 9-win Nebraska team that needed their best player, Amir Abdullah, hands down the best player on the team, had to completely pull an SP level play, literally an SP play, out of his ass to beat McNeese freaking State on one of the last plays of the game.
Oh, yes.
That's a 1AA team. I don't give a rat's ass if they're a great 1AA team. It's a 1AA team. You shouldn't have your best player of the last half dozen years pulling a complete ESPY out of his ass to beat a 1AA team. That's almost shameful.
Well,
and thank God he did it, because talk about embarrassing. But that's one of those things that just shouldn't happen. But that's, in my mind, that's kind of, God, every other freaking game that Pelini had was like that.
Well,
and last year Nebraska was like that too. Nebraska was, they were 2-3 plays a game, in some cases one play a game, from having a 10 or 11-win season.
But they still would have been a okay team.
And that, you know, and that's the bottom line. If Nebraska last year had finished with 10 wins, if you had watched, if they had that one or two plays against BYU, Illinois, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Iowa, two plays. They were two plays from beating Iowa last year. And if Nebraska had those two plays per game, they would have finished with, like I said, a 10 or 11-win season. But if you had gone and watched all of those games, you'd be sitting here right next to me saying, yeah, you're right. They were, you know, they were okay.
They would have been in the upper echelon.
They were good, but they weren't great. And there is an upper echelon. And the teams in that upper echelon would take an 11-2 Nebraska team last year and would have just kicked the shit out of them. Now, here's the thing, and I hate saying this, because you say you're an Iowa guy. You got an Iowa hat on. Iowa went up against one of those upper echelon teams.
Michigan State.
Michigan State was kind of, they were in sort of a limbo between that 11-win team on paper. They were a little bit better than that. That they weren't the true upper echelon team. They were kind of the rare bird. They were kind of that in between, and they get a couple of breaks. There was no way that Michigan State was going to go to the college football playoff and beat somebody.
Okay, you're right.
Like against the other teams, and when you look at Alabama, when you look at Clemson, when you look at Oklahoma, it just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Oklahoma was maybe a hair better last year than Michigan State. I thought the better matchup in the semifinals would have been Michigan State, Oklahoma, and Clemson, Alabama. It would have made for a horrible matchup in the national title game. So it probably worked out well the way it did. But I thought Iowa was one of those teams where there was a little, I hate saying smoke and mirrors. Iowa worked wonders with what they had.
I don't disagree with you.
Iowa and I say this in all seriousness, they took the athletes they had, and those athletes played, they could not have played better, player by player, man by man, they could have not have played better than they did last season. And it was a genius job of coaching by Iowa's coaching staff last year. I thought the coaching staff, some of the best play calling over the course of the season that I've ever seen out of any coaching staff. But they, you know, they had, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this. Let's say on a scale of 1 to 10.
Okay.
10 would have been Alabama last year. 9.75 would have been Clemson last year. 9.5 Ohio State last year.
Seven.
Iowa was like a 7, and I'll even give them a 7.5. They were like a,
that 9.5 to 7.5, that's a big drop off.
It is. If Iowa, let's put it this way, if Iowa, in terms of player effort, coaching effort, player talent, coaching talent, let's say the max talent and effort on all of those areas was a 7.5. Iowa got, out of all of their potential, 7.5 is the top potential Iowa had. They got a they worked about 7.49 out of their 7.5 potential.
And just let it be known, Husker fans who are listening, Rob brought up the Hawkeyes, not me. I just want it to be known that we've talked more Iowa football here at the
NFL. But my point is that there's a corollary to Nebraska here. And I mean, Alabama's potential was a 10 last year. And Alabama got probably they got about a 9.8 out of that 10.
And towards the end, it was a 10.
It was all a 10. Yeah, the point two they lost was in the one game they lost last year. So it's the best they could have done was a 10. They hit about a 9.8. The pure best that Iowa could have done last year was a 7.5. I think they hit about a 7.49. They got as much out of their potential as was humanly possible.
So what's your point with Nebraska on this?
My point is last year I think Nebraska was also about a 7.5.
But they only played at maybe what, a 4.9?
I'd say five and a half.
You see the drop-offs there.
They made a bowl game, and I understand the bowl game was, shit, we ran out of teams playing bowls. Crap, let's take Nebraska. Their fans travel. Okay. I know they had the whole academic ranking thing, but no, Nebraska did. They made the most of it. They went to a bowl game against a talented, low-depth, injury-riddled, but still talented UCLA team and kicked the shit out of
them. Okay, so let me ask you this.
So the potential was there.
Whereas if Nebraska was a 5 last year,
potential-wise, I thought they were about a 7.5 last year.
Okay, where are they this year?
I thought they were on par with Iowa. Iowa got essentially everything they could have out of the potential they had. Nebraska didn't even come close. I think Nebraska this year, between a 7.5 and an 8.
Okay, so about the same.
I think if Nebraska maximizes their potential, you're looking at what I've been talking about all along. They'd be a 9-10-11 win team. And guess what? They would still be a 7.5-8 on a scale of 10, and they would not be in that upper echelon with the Ohio States and the Alabamas and teams like that.
So there you have it, Nebraska, looking about a 7.5. But if things go their way, they could be up there in the 8s, the 9s, and get that 10 or 11.
They'll get the wins. They're not going to be an 8. I'm talking on a scale of 1 to 10 potential here. I'm not talking about numbers of
their wins. The potential is just, it's capped at 7.5.
On a scale of 1 to 10, their potential is a 7.5.
Okay.
If they do what Iowa did last year
and
maximize that potential, you're looking at a 10, maybe 11 win season.
Okay. That puts it in perspective for me. I get that. I think that's all.
They would get 10 or 11 wins, but they would be a hell of a long shot to beat anybody who's in that upper echelon. Just probably not going to happen, because I don't think the talent is quite there yet.
Hey, if you like what the doctor is saying, he's going to be at the game on Saturday, I believe, so you need to follow him on Twitter, at DocTalkSports. He's going to have the phone in his pocket, and he'll be tweeting maybe before, during, and even after the game.
See how much Nebraska Brewing Company or Zipline I've been drinking that
But day. Again,
it's I do like to tailgate.
At DocTalkSports. And while you're tweeting at us, if you've noticed, we've been drinking Nebraska craft brews before these podcasts. This week, it's the Sally Weiss by Nebraska Brewing Company. If you know of a Nebraska craft brew that you think Rob and I should try and drink, tweet it to us. We'll head to Beertopia. We'll go to Spirit World.
It's going
to
be painful, but we will sacrifice.
Yes, and tell us what to try. We will try it and give you our review. Sally Weiss is, it's too heavy for me.
I don't think this is heavy.
Maybe it's just too sweet for me.
I don't think it's too sweet. I'm kind of liking this one because I think the problem is, so it's aged in Chardonnay barrels. You can taste it.
Yes.
You can definitely, I'm drinking this.
Maybe this would have been good at 6 o'clock in the evening and not 11 o'clock at night.
Do you know what this makes me think about? I picture sitting around a fire pit or sitting around the grill in the backyard on a summer's day. Everybody's got that wine glass.
Yeah, this is not a winter beer.
It's not a winter beer. And your wife just pulled that Chardonnay out of the fridge. And your wine glass is just dripping sweat in the hot, humid summer. That's what I feel like I'm drinking right now. It's good. I like it. It's crisp. It's a good beer.
Everybody, that was Rob talking dirty.
Travis does not like Nebraska Brewing
that's
Company.
No. That's not what I said.
I give a thumbs up. I like the Sally Watch. Travis says this stuff is crap.
He put words in my mouth. You heard him.
I'm going to finish Travis's, then I'm going to have to sit here for an hour to sober up.
He's Dr. Rob Zadisk. I'm Travis Justice. Enjoy week number one of the college football season. Nebraska, Fresno State, Huskers a 29-point favorite. We want to thank the Remington Trophy for being the presenting sponsor of this podcast. Also, our sponsor, Husker Hounds, 3 locations in the Omaha area. And again, thank you to Husker Max for distributing the podcast. We'll be back next week to talk about game number two and also kind of a wrap-up of the Fresno State game. Have a great Saturday. Enjoy the start of college football, everybody.